KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Coming up, with more than two dozen forest fires continuing to burn, we'll hear why fire officials may not even try to put some of them out. And we'll meet a grandmother living in the Sierra Nevada who's a first line of defense against fires.
They rely on us to give them the big picture. You know, and if they're in a helicopter, they've got the big picture. But flight time's expensive.
Also, women bloggers flex their online muscles at a San Francisco convention.
We're the majority of the population, the majority of voters, and the majority of newspaper buyers. Today, women are really taking back news and information and telling the stories that we're missing from these media outlets.
I'm Scott Schaefer. Those stories, plus the father of Chicano music. It's the California Report. With most of the state's 2,000-plus wildfires now under control, the sense of crisis we felt a few weeks ago is gone. Firefighters are hoping to contain the biggest blaze near Big Sur by next week. But up in the northern reaches of California, there are still almost a dozen wildfires on thousands of acres in remote areas. David Gorn explains why fire officials plan to let those fires burn uncontrolled for the rest of the summer.
When the end of the world comes, what will be left are lizards and wasps. Those are the only signs of life in this bald, blackened landscape, high in the hills above Big Sur. Fire swept through here, and now every slope, every steep canyon for miles, is black soot. And the only movement up here is the occasional lizard and the hovering wasps. Okay, lizards and wasps and a Firecat XL bulldozer. This giant dozer was driven up here to cut a wide swath of fire line. Tom Little Bear Nason perches in his machine like he was permanently ratcheted into the seat. He's been fighting fires for 30 years, and he still gets a little nervous coaxing his 22-ton cat up these near-vertical inclines.
We're on some of the steepest slopes in the United States. We're looking at, you know, 50-plus percent slopes, up to 70-75% slope, and that's about as far as you can go with a piece of heavy equipment and a ton of rock. And bulldozers, you know, don't do well on top of rocks. They tend to slide and slip a lot.
Nason is working the biggest fire of this record-setting fire season. The fires burning in the Ventana Wilderness have torched more than 200,000 acres so far, making it one of the largest fires in California history. It's a week away from containment, but that means flames are still racing along its east side. And even when it is contained, Nason says, that doesn't mean it'll be completely out.
This fire will burn until it rains. We're thinking October, November, we start getting some rains, it'll put it out.
What most people don't understand, Nason says, is that inside the circle of the fire line, there's still a lot of brush and trees that haven't yet burned. And it's nearly impossible to extinguish the fire completely, which means this fire will flare up and burn off and on for 2 months or more. And if a wind comes up, it could fan the fire and blow embers across the fire line. That's a concern for all the contained fires throughout California, according to National Fire Service spokesman Jason Kirshner. And he says there's one more concern. There are about 10 fires in the northern part of the state, in Butte, Shasta, and Trinity counties, where firefighters are going to just let the blazes burn themselves out. They'll continue to burn, uncontrolled, all summer.
It's very likely that we're going to continue to see fire up in these areas lasting up until the fall, up until we get good rains or get good snow up there. It's kind of tough for some people to fathom that the fires will go that long, but it's the reality of the situation that we're dealing with.
These northern fires are not threatening life or property or watersheds, Kirshner says. They're in rugged terrain where it's difficult to establish fire lines and can be dangerous for firefighters. And given the monumental scope of the California wildfires so far, and needing to plan for the big fires yet to come this season, he says, the smartest strategy is to let those fires burn.
It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We're not going to go out there and take a lot of big risks to attack these fires. We are really at the beginning of the fire season, and we know that a lot of these fires are probably going to be burning for a long time in these remote areas.
That's common practice toward the end of fire season, letting fires burn themselves out while you wait for rain and cooler temperatures. But according to Max Moritz, director of UC Berkeley Center for Fire Research and Outreach, when you have dry forests and months of hot summer and you let blazes go, you could be playing with fire.
Letting fires burn this early in the season could end up resulting in some very large areas burned, probably larger than is typical.
Last year's Zaca fire in Santa Barbara County was like that, he says. It burned for months and ended up as one of the largest fires in California history, even though it wasn't fanned by the dry winds that typically come up in late August and September.
The whole state is primed for bad weather days, for bad, windy, hot, dry, windy days. And those are typically the events that cause the big home losses, the big areas burned.
So there's the danger from existing fires, re-sparking from hot, dry winds, Moritz says. And if you let those remote Northern California wildfires burn, they get a sort of running start in the upper half of the state if a Santa Ana-type wind hits them. Because there's a myth about Santa Ana winds, Moritz says. Those winds do not just happen in Southern California.
They are the most obvious and the most severe in Southern California, but they actually show up in different parts of the state.
Jason Kirshner of the National Forest Service says they're not tempting fate by letting those remote fires burn. No one's fighting them, but they're being monitored, he says. And as for the patchwork of contained fires around the state, well, this fire season, he says, the word containment actually means a bit more.
This early into the year, there's probably a higher standard for what we're going to consider contained.
Fire officials are monitoring spent fires more closely all summer, he says, and establishing wider buffers around the fires. Tom Little Bear Nason is busy making one of those wide buffers with his dozer. It's hot, dusty work on this mountain, where temperatures top 90 degrees and dirt and ash fill the air. He may be done with this particular job in a week, but unfortunately, he says, he's going to have a lot more to do in the coming months. For the California Report, I'm David Gorin.
More than 12,000 people across California have worked to get all those fires under control. Some are perched above forests, scanning the horizon for lightning strikes and smoldering trees in hopes of snuffing out trouble before it spreads. Sasha Coca paid a visit to one woman who spent the last 20 fire seasons living in a remote tower in Giant Sequoia National Monument.
The two-mile hike up switchbacks to the Needles Fire Lookout starts near the windy Western Divide Highway, about 100 miles northeast of Bakersfield. I climb 188 wooden steps to the top of a sheer granite pinnacle with terrifying drop-offs on either side. Margie Kelly calls down a greeting from the tower.
Greetings, Earthling. Pretty spectacular perch you got up here, Margie.
Welcome to the Needles.
Kelly is a 55-year-old grandmother who's tough enough to mountain bike up the trail. In her tower, she's braved earthquakes, lightning strikes, and sometimes 80 fires in a season. The view through the tower windows is breathtaking. Kelly can scan a 360-degree panorama that includes parts of Sequoia National Park, Mount Whitney, and the Tehachapi Mountains north of Los Angeles.
Oh, here comes my weather. Oh.
For the North Sequoia National Forest, high pressure over the region will keep very warm and dry conditions across the district through at least Friday.
Kelly lives 6 months a year in this tidy 14 by 14 foot room. A plush double bed takes up a third of the space, and then there's a tiny stove and oven, a propane refrigerator, and a water crock for drinking and washing. Her radio console dominates the center of the room. On this day, another lookout calls in a report of a fire near a campground.
Yeah. Fire, fire, fire. That's what that means. Three tones is fire.
All units, Fort Bill. Report of a vegetation fire response area in Lake.
Kelly spends most of her time listening to radio traffic, peering through binoculars and plotting fires on a huge circular map covered by a glass disc.
It's hard to see what a fire is doing when you're on the ground and it's right in front of you. So they rely on us to give them the big picture, you know, and if they're in a helicopter, they've got the big picture. But flight time's expensive. They're only in the air when they have to be.
Kelly's chair is perched atop a wooden platform with glass feet that helps deflect electric current from lightning. She sometimes tape records radio traffic during lightning storms so she doesn't have to touch her metal instruments.
This is a tape that was made during a lightning storm.
11:41. Another strike on Sand Hill. Light precip. About mid-slope.
I said, right after the strike, I said, Spooky, are you okay?
Who's Spooky?
The name of my cat. He was here for 18 years.
Now, Kelly lives a pretty solitary existence, but she does get visitors. She bakes chocolate chip cookies for the rock climbers who come to scale the famous pinnacles nearby. Her grandkids stay for a week each year. On this day, hiker Nathan Schultz and his 4-year-old daughter Aiden visit the tower.
We're just flabbergasted. This is just great.
The afternoon winds picking up to close to 18 miles an hour. Aiden's hanging tight onto the rails to keep from getting blown off as her dad talks to Margie Kelly through the window.
How high are we right now?
This is 8245, the elevation of the lookout. And Whitney is 14497.
This is Kelly's 21st season up in this little tower. And over the years, she's had all kinds of visitors. There's the tourist who sat down and clipped his toenails all over her floor, and the one who helped herself to dinner. As the wind picks up to 23 miles an hour, I notice a plume of smoke frothing into a thick white cloud in the eastern sky. But Kelly doesn't seem fazed. This is a fire the Forest Service is letting burn. When Kelly took this job 2 decades ago, the philosophy was to suppress every fire. Now the idea is to let some fires burn to keep the forest healthy.
It's cranking right now. This is what they call the magic hour, the witching hour. Just the conditions are right. The sun's in the right position. The solar's working. The winds are kicking. All the right setup for extreme fire behavior.
Kelly and other fire watchers know their jobs may not be around forever. In the 1930s, there were more than 600 fire lookouts in California. Now there are just about 50. And as fire managers face tough budget choices, there's talk of installing more cameras to watch fires instead of people. But Margie Kelly says there's no substitute for human eyes when it comes to spotting a wildfire. For the California Report, I'm Sasha Coca in Giant Sequoia National Monument.
You got to see the view from Margie Kelly's mountaintop fire tower. Check it out at our website. It's californiareport.org. Chandra and Lee Watson used to sing under the somewhat mysterious name Black Swan. After the identical siblings from Kentucky moved to California, they renamed their act the Watson Twins. The California Report's pop music critic Steve Hockman has this review of their debut album, Fire Songs.
How am I to be with all your silly ways now? How am I to be with all your silly ways now?
One thing about identical twins is you just never quite know who you're dealing with. Take Fire Songs, the debut album by Chandra and Lee Watson, the Los Angeles pair that performs as the Watson Twins. These opening strains of the first song, How Am I to Be, are the sounds of innocence, of naivete, sounds that could easily have wafted out of a transistor radio in 1962.
Our truce expired when, armed with my secrets, the fight began.
Except that here the singer is hardly naive, delving deep into the complexities of human relationships, warts, wars, and all. And the music, as straightforward as it seems, is a little off-kilter. As soon as you think you've got it figured out, it changes.
Oh, lady. Lady, love me. Oh, lady.
Now, maybe that's because the album's second song, Lady Love Me, with its references to scars and bruises, was co-written by Lee, while How Am I to Be is a Chandra composition. In fact, the twins wrote none of the songs together. There are clearly differences between Lee's songs and Chandra's songs in their approaches to the music and perspectives on emotions. But different how? That's as tricky as telling one from the other without knowing them. They do share an unfussy yet sultry vocal approach that at times is reminiscent of Natalie Merchant, as on Lee's Dig a Little Deeper.
So you've tasted the water, and your mind's been running wild, and all you need is some forgiving. But the well is all but dry. Why don't you dig? Just dig a little deeper. Find your own way out.
Whatever is going on, the Watsons almost reinvent, or at least recontext, when in a different era was called California rock. It's that combination of country, rock, and pop that 35 years ago in the hands of Linda Ronstadt, Jackson Browne, Fleetwood Mac, and Neil Young so perfectly captured a sense of time and place. In the twins' care, and that of producers and primary musicians Jay Soda and Russell Pollard from the band Everest, the sound frequently skews toward Young's less polished end of the scale. The Watsons, who originated in Kentucky, actually arrived at this approach in the course of working with key figures in the more recent generation of L.A. rock, among them the late Elliott Smith and the band Early Mart. And it was their featured billing on Rilo Kiley singer Jenny Lewis's solo debut a couple of years ago that provided the twins' breakthrough into public consciousness. But when they turned to an outside source, the song they go with is Just Like Heaven, a 1987 hit by The Cure, from England. And yet it's a perfect fit for their aesthetic zone. See, that's the thing about the Watson Twins' fire songs. You just never quite know.
Moving lips to breathe her name, I opened up my eyes. Found myself alone, alone, alone above her agency. Stole the only girl I love. Found her deep inside of me.
Steve Hockman covers pop music for the Los Angeles Times and other publications, and he writes the weekly global music column Around the World for AOL's Spinner.com. He reviewed Fire Songs by the Watson Twins. Once upon a time, girls kept their most personal thoughts in a diary hidden somewhere in their bedrooms. But in the era of Facebook and personal blogs, secret handwritten diaries are just a quaint relic. Thousands of female bloggers recently shared ideas for their online commentaries at a convention in San Francisco. The blogger conference, called Blog Her, was put on by the website of the same name. We sent the California Report's Rachel Miro to the gathering.
If you've ever lain awake at night, fearing for your financial future, or fretting that your unique perspective on the world is getting lost in the roar of mainstream media, it may be time to launch a blog.
Andy Warhol was wrong. Everybody wasn't going to have 15 minutes. Everybody will have their own blog.
That's Wendy Wimmer of Wisconsin, a.k.a. Weetabix on ElasticWaste.com, one of more than 2,000 blogs indexed on BlogHer.com that deal with everything from pool parties to presidential politics. Sitting next to Wimmer is Fausta Wirtz of Princeton, New Jersey. Fausta's blog, that's the name, claims 2,000 unique readers, and she podcasts, too. Her focus is American and Latin American politics.
It helps to focus. At the same time, you don't want to get to the point that you're writing the same thing over and over.
How do you avoid that?
That's one thing, one good thing about blogging about Latin America. I'll never run out of blogging material.
Wirtz also covers culture, but politics is her mainstay, and her commentary gets picked up periodically by newspapers, including the New York Times. That's quite a coup in the offline world. In 2006, women wrote just 12% of the opinion pieces in the Times, according to a recent study from Rutgers. There isn't a human being alive who'd argue women lack opinions, yet the same study found a similar drought in other American papers. That needs to change, says blogger CEO Lisa Stone.
We're the majority of the population, the majority of voters, and the majority of newspaper buyers. Today, women are really taking back news and information and telling the stories that we're missing from these media outlets.
This is not just a bunch of isolated people in their sweats in front of screens. These are people who are changing the world, really.
Blogger COO Elisa Cabahort Page. According to Page, if you're not part of the blogosphere, you may be losing out on the opportunity to change your life. There is a hope burbling throughout the conference halls here that with enough positive thinking and proper product placement, a blog can propel its creator into that bright, shiny stratosphere where fame and fortune reach out and grab you.
Let me tell you a story about one of the women in our network. She decided as her New Year's resolution, she was going to make a home-cooked meal every night in her crock pot. And she started a blog to record the recipes. So this is just at the beginning of this year. Well, no one was doing that. There was no crock pot, daily crock pot blog. She was just on the Rachel Ray Show last week. She's working on a book deal. She found something that was totally personal, something she was really into, and that was unique. And that is still possible because every one of us has some way that we are different from everybody else.
There's even money to be made in mommy blogging. Some cringe at that label, which encompasses a staggering variety of sites. Some are really community parenting forums. Others are digital diaries. Even within that subcategory, you'll find dreck and writing that surpasses anything in print. Moms being moms, they worry about the ethics of making their children's private lives the subject of public scrutiny. But for some, the opportunity to share with a sympathetic audience is just too great to resist. Crystal, no last name, blogs about her children at Boobs, Injuries, and Dr. Pepper. Her daughter, Virginia...
She got her head stuck in between the wall and the couch like 3 times, and I think I blogged about that, but... You know, I figure if, you know, later on down the road she's applying for Yale and they don't want to give her an entry in because of that. So.
Most moms agree turnabout is fair play when the daughters grow old enough to write about their parents. Whatever the digital craze in 2025, they'll probably grasp the appeal of having their say. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro.
The music of guitarist and singer Lalo Guerrero is linked to the Zoot Suit scene in 1940s Los Angeles. As part of our continuing series, California Songs, his son, Mark Guerrero, explains how his father got young Mexican-Americans called pachucos dancing boogie-woogie all over the state.
Okay, I'll sing the first little verse. Swing chicas patas, ese es mi borlo, lo bailo en tu la... The song is called Chicas Patas Boogie. He wrote the lyric to this. This was based on the music to a song called Oh Babe by Louis Prima. And he wrote this not only a Spanish lyric, but a lyric in caló, pachuco slang. Pachucos originated in El Paso, Texas, probably in the 30s, and they had this very cool way of talking that really wasn't Spanish. It had sort of a combination of anglicized Spanish words and Hispanicized English words.
Soy chicas patas, ese es mi borlo, lo bailo en Tula, con una chula, lo bailo en San. Con una huisita todo tren, hey, lo bailan los carnales hay en Sangrará. También los camaradas hay en Sambra. También las chavalonas en Verdugo. También los pachucones en el Chuco. Se pone a todo tren cuando bailan Bugi.
Lo bailo en Tula con una chula. I dance it in Tulare, as in Tulare in Central California, with a cute girl. A chula is a girl that's really cute and good-looking. San Fra is San Francisco. I dance it with my brothers over in San Francisco. Also my friends in Sacra, Sacramento. So it's kind of like the forerunner. This was before Surfin' USA and Chuck Berry's, you know, where he mentions we're rocking in Memphis or whatever. This was before all that.
In Arizona, a tempo mona, lo han apañado en Colorado, en todo Texas, y hasta Nuevo México también.
Mexican Americans in the late 40s, as in later, have always enjoyed African American music. At that time, it was jump swing and boogie woogie. And what was so interesting was my dad was the first to make that kind of music, but with caló in it, and in Spanish, things that they could relate to. He didn't record in English basically because of racism. He wanted to. In fact, his idols were Rudy Valley and later Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, and he could sing like them, and he had no accent. But there was no chance at that time for a brown-skinned, very Indian-looking man to be a romantic singer in the mainstream.
Musician Mark Guerrero. His father, Lalo Guerrero, known as the father of Chicano music, died 3 years ago in Palm Springs. Lalo Guerrero recorded some 700 songs over his 65-year-long career. He never really broke into the English language market, but in 1980, he was named a National Folk Treasure by the Smithsonian Institution. He was later awarded a National Medal of the Arts by President Bill Clinton. And that's our show for today. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. The director is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is the technical producer. We had additional engineering from Tom Krimkowski. Our interns are Amanda Stupai, Dan Verrall, Alexis Kenyon, Josh Lehman, and Jacob Fenston, who, by the way, produced our California song this week. The online editor is Gabriel Cohen. Our producer is Susie Rocho. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. Bruce Kuhn is the news director. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation for coverage of immigration issues throughout California, and the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, rating hospital quality in California. On the web at calhospitalcompare.org.